All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And every week on Saturday morning, we get up early and come in here and talk to you all about some aspect of A Course in Miracles and what it's like to live in the House of the Risen Sun. This is where we are. And we've been slowly but surely going through Gary Renard's newest book, Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions. And we have gotten all the way up to, let me see, ta-da. Oh, now it's trying to get me to log in.
Well, I have us on page 164 in the printed version. I know you're on the electronic version, so.
Yeah, so I guess it signed me out of everything. What? My password is incorrect. No, that's not true. Okay, how about that?
Should I go ahead and start reading?
Sure.
Why don't you
go ahead and start while I try to figure out what...
All right. So anyway, likewise on the good morning to everyone. Yeah, I'll just jump in where we left off last week in Gary Renard's fourth book, which we're very much enjoying, as Lynn mentioned, Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, History of Mighty Companions. And I have us on page 164 if you want to follow along. And it goes as follows. God did not make this world and has nothing to do with it. That one sentence alone is enough of an eye-opener for me anyway, that when I read Gary's first book back in 2007, I was like, oh my gosh, I somehow knew that was in A Course in Miracles, but I had to go back and you know, dive back into the course, which I had somewhat set aside, and knowing that I'd get back to it, having first picked it up in the mid-80s and studied it for a number of years, but you know, the full impact of forgiveness and that one idea, those two things that were so clearly spelled out in Gary's books and why they're called such a can opener for so many people, including myself, is a great example of that, because the premise that God had anything to do with the world of space and time and form and bodies and personas and specifics and anything to do with individuality and the whole thought system of sin, guilt, and fear, that whole idea really was totally renewed and invigorated with the first reading of Gary's first book for me 11 years ago. And then I dove headfirst into like a lot of Ken Wapnick's material and have been doing so since. And anyway, so much gratitude to Gary. So that's just a commentary on the first sentence. How's that? So let me start over again. God did not make this world and has nothing to do with it. God knows where you really are, safe at home. You're being prepared to awaken to a higher life form, which is your real life. But, like God, your real life has no form. It is perfect oneness. There are no restrictions. There are no edges or barriers or limits of any kind. There's no friction to impede the glorious extension of your love. And everyone you've ever loved is there, every person, every animal, not as bodies, but in perfect oneness. So you are aware that nobody and nothing could ever be left out. And because you are one and not bodies, you are actually closer to them than you could ever be in this world. Bodies cannot really join. The Course teaches that true union is possible only at the level of the mind. So, right there is quite a lot, huh?
Yes, it is. Now I'm redoing, putting in a new password.
Okay. Should I continue reading for a while then while you're doing
Yes, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, all right. Persis continues, don't ever let anyone teach you that you can bypass the mind. Jay tells you in his course that your mind's ability to make a choice, your power to choose, is your true power in this world. Those who want to bypass the mind are giving up the only power they have. Pure non-dualistic thinking with the Holy Spirit reverses the thinking of the world. And the choice you're supposed to make is spelled out for you at the end of the text. And the choice always involves the way you think about other people. Choose once again what you would have him be, remembering that every choice you make establishes your own identity as you see it and believe it is. again, a very succinct summary of the interpersonal, truly transpersonal metaphysics of A Course in Miracles there. I'll read one more. Why does it establish your own identity? That's because of the way the mind works. To review, it's obvious most people are aware only of the conscious mind, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you could go deep enough into the mind, into Carl Jung's collective unconscious, you'd find that there is only one mind. That's because there's really only one of you. There's just one ego appearing as many. And Gary responds, the Hindu's world of multiplicity. And Persis says, you have been listening. Good boy. So despite what you see, there's just one of you and one mind. But that presents a problem for you that you can't see. The projection of a universe of time and space that you can see is coming from that one unconscious mind. That's where the projector is hidden. That's your unconscious mind. Thus your unconscious mind knows everything. If that's where everything that you're seeing is coming from, then by definition, on some level, your mind knows everything. Even the truth is buried there, waiting to be remembered. And if the unconscious mind knows everything, then it knows that there's really just one of you. That's good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Because the mind knows everything, including the fact that there's just one of you, it will interpret anything you think or say, no matter how subtle, about another person, to really be about you. And it will determine how you feel about yourself, and ultimately even what you believe you are. That's why the Course says every choice you make establishes your own identity as you see it and believe it is. That's why the Course emphasizes that as you see Him, you will see yourself. And it's true.
All right. Well, I finally got my book open.
Ah, the complexity of this world, isn't it? Isn't it amusing sometimes?
Yeah, so let's see. So did you just read...
I just got through 164 and read the end of the paragraph that spilled over into page 165, which now is setting up for Gary and Persa to have another dialogue.
So does Gary start with, so people are determining?
Yes, yes.
All right. Woohoo! I got there.
All right. Do you have any comments of what was just read, or do you want to jump
no,
right
yeah, I do actually, because this is so important. Is because if the mind is if the mind knows everything, and the mind knows that there's just one of me, that there is nothing out there, even you, Bruce. Sorry, you're not there.
I know.
Except in my own mind, which. You could protest that, and yet since you don't know what's in my mind, you really don't know. And since I don't know what's in your mind, I don't know either. But I have a pretty good idea that the character of Lynn that Bruce knows is a character that's in his own mind and doesn't exist in any way at all. And you can think about that. You know, how many people know you as you really are? And how do they know you as you really are? Well, they don't. Nobody really knows you as you really are because they only know what's in their mind about you. They can't know anything other than what's in their own mind. You can't know anything other than what's in your own mind as long as you're thinking with the mind of the ego, the small mind. So all you're going to see when you look at me is your own ego. You know, all you're going to see when you look at me is your own mind. And it's, we don't want to believe that. We don't want to think that. But deep down, we do know it. And so, you know, what they're saying here is so helpful to us to know that even if it's not my experience, even if I don't understand how it is, I can, just sitting here in my chair, close my eyes, go into my own mind, and recognize that I don't know a damn thing outside of that. I don't know anything outside of what's in my own mind. I can't imagine anything that's not that's outside of my own mind. If I can imagine something that seems like it's outside of my own mind, look where it's taking place. That imagination is not taking place in the field or in the house next door or, you know, in the people on the TV or Bruce. It's not happening. It's only happening here. I'm the only one who's hearing it, and I'm the only one who is experiencing it. And so, you know, and to me, and I read a story, you know, it was kind of one of those Flatland kind of stories, where it was a woman went into the hospital to have a baby, and when the baby was born, it was a blue pyramid, not a baby at all.
I don't think I just read that story, because I wouldn't remember that one.
The woman, it's just a short story, and it's, you know, I used to get these compilations of science fiction short story. They do like a magazine every quarter or something with the best. It was one of those kind of stories, and I read it, and because in another dimension, a woman had a human baby, a pyramid and a obelisk had a human baby. In this other dimension.
Okay, sure. I mean, it sounds like the Star Trek episode where Kirk and some of his crew have a transporter malfunction and beam into a parallel universe, and the evil universe crew swaps with the benevolent universe crew. I don't know if you remember that episode, but anyway.
I do remember that as well. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what it is. Only it's a geometric universe swapping
a
form universe, and so you know, eventually they straighten it out and the babies got to where they actually belonged, but that's really what it is. If I'm imagining anything outside of myself, it is a foreign object. Your body, your being is a foreign object, and I don't recognize it. It appears to be a pyramid in my world of round humans. I have geometric forms that are taking life now. Anyway, but I guess what I'm trying to emphasize is that the only way I know that that is a pyramid and not a baby is because of something in my mind that says this is what this is. Even though it was just as much of a baby as my baby was, I didn't recognize it because it didn't appear to me the way that I expect it to appear. And so that's what's happening. We're expecting things to appear in a certain way, and we don't recognize them appearing in another way. And when they appear in another way, it seems like, you know, it may be love, but it seems like anger. It seems like punishment. It seems like guilt. It's, you know, all these other things that it seems like, when in reality it's only love. And it's the same thing with our fellows, our brothers, is that where they appear to be a certain thing, they really are love, nothing but love. And today's lesson really emphasized that to me, because it is all about looking and seeing really what is the truth about what I am and what my brother is. And today, now I would be as God created me. Today I will accept the truth about myself. I will arise in glory and allow the light in me to shine upon the world throughout the day. I bring the world the tidings of salvation, which I hear as God my Father speaks to me. And I behold the world that Christ would have me see, aware it ends the bitter dream of death, aware it is my Father's call to me. So that lesson is all about what I choose to see today, whose eyes I'm looking through, mm-hmm. whose heart I'm feeling with, whose mind I'm thinking with.
Yep.
And if I'm thinking only with the Christ mind, feeling with the Christ heart, expressing through Christ mind, then that is all I'm going to see. I'm not going to see your guilt. I'm not going to see your, you know, your failings. because you have none. I'm only going to see the Christ because that's all that's there. This really is all about really true vision. And that's why the Course says every choice you make establishes your own identity, and you will see it and believe it is. That's why the Course emphasizes that is you see Him, you will see yourself. And it's true. So if I rose up this morning and said, today I'm going to see a world of guilt and fear, well, that's just about every morning.
And that's what we come into this world to find, because that's how we set it up by default. We can change the default. We can kind of like the Star Trek episode with the Kobayashi Maru, where Kirk at Starfleet Academy outsmarts the impossible test by reprogramming the computer to allow him to achieve the goal of the task. We can change the jurisdiction or rewrite the script by forgiveness. By changing the total ground rules altogether of this world, by recognizing that the very premise of this world is fraudulent, and we can use it for a different purpose. We can turn it around, as Byron Katie might say, and see it as a classroom instead of a prison. We can see opportunities to see really the true nature of, as you were pointing out, Lynn, of everyone, and which is that, you know, everyone is either expressing love or a call for it, and so with that insight, we can respond to everything universally with loving kindness, because that's the appropriate response, regardless of whatever appears to be expressed at any moment. Well, another thing you said that I thought was interesting, that you were talking about how infants have to learn what things are and so forth. And then I was momentarily flashed on some of the technology we have, like Alexa and Siri and those kind of things that we laugh because they have these sort of 2-year-old infantile responses, even though the circuitry may be really quick. The context isn't fully developed, and sometimes the humor in that is self-evident. And then thinking about that kind of reminds me that's why A Course in Miracles has so much of the humor in A Course in Miracles is really about recognizing how silly it is to trust in our own little separate judgment. And as you were speaking earlier about our own mind, I mean, that's the clue. If we have to put the word our, O-U-R, in front of mind, as to distinguish it from the capital M mind that is the Christ mind that A Course in Miracles refers to as, returning to, then that's a clue. If we're using that seemingly separate mind, we have an incredibly limited context. And to, one with a greater understanding which is the one that we all are, our silliness and our shenanigans in this world seem laughable because we don't see the big picture in the same way that a cartoon that I like to refer back to that shows these two guys in a Jeep in the desert, driving along you see this bird's eye view from like thousands of feet up, and it's just a tiny little Jeep, and looking down on them, and then the cartoon bubble says, yeah, I guess it was another one of those wild rumors, one of the guys in the Jeep to each other. And what they don't see is that they're driving inside an enormous footprint that's probably about a mile across, but that's kind of the context. We don't see the big picture, and so because we don't, we have to, if we're honest with ourselves, and really get this curriculum, we have to, begin at least however slowly or however dimly to recognize that our deeply cherished and entrenched ideas not only are incorrect, but they're almost always about wanting to make the dream different, and putting our dream repair technician hat on, or if we realize always we're doing that, our recovering dream repair technician hat on, and just having a good laugh, not necessarily of course not in any kind of derisive way or any kind of mean spirited way, but just see how silly it is for us to think that we have any part of the picture, let alone the whole thing sorted out. We're basically clueless, as a first approximation.
I love that, and I love that picture, because Yes, the same thing. You can be just not, you know, just yards away from a great discovery, and because you're not in the right place at that time, you don't see it. And
mm-hmm.
You know, I think about miners when they come out, like to Colorado, they would come out here and, you know, they'd try to guess where's the vein of gold or where's the vein of whatever. And so they're digging and digging and digging, and somebody comes along and, you know, finds a patch that's, you know, just, you know, a little bit away from them, and they start digging and find it immediately, because you got to be digging in the right place.
Right.
And that's what, you know, A Course in Miracles is all about, telling us where's the place to dig.
Yeah.
Where do you go to find this stuff? It's right here in your own mind. So,
another way to extend that metaphor is metaphorically, if we use the thought system of the Holy Spirit, everywhere we dig is gold, because everything, again, becomes an opportunity to look at the mind and either see an expression of love or to call for it, and to learn to generalize and to see the world through the eyes of loving kindness. And that really is what liberates us from the tyranny of ego's condemnatory approach to things. Because, you know, the knee-jerk reaction to ego's experience of anything is some form of fear. I mean, it may take the form of judgment or belittlement, or just the whole idea of just differences, inferior or superior. This is better than that. That's worse than this. The whole gamut of stuff is all just basically designed to make differences real and separation real, and continue a needless slavery. When we really do have an opportunity at every moment to walk out of our imaginary mental prisons, and because the door's always been open, and that's what our inner kindness teacher points out, is the door's always open. In fact, there's never even been a door; it's just wide open. But we didn't see it.
What were you thinking? Yeah, just turn around. There it is. It's right mm-hmm. before you,
yep.
And it's true. It's right there in front of us, always, all the time. Thank you for that. And I'm going to continue reading.
Okay.
And so this is an exchange between Gary and Persa. So Gary says, so people are determining how they're going to feel about themselves right now by how they think about other people, whether they're going to be happy or depressed, whether they're going to feel guilty or innocent, or think that their spirit, body or spirit is all determined the same way. And Persa says, yes. That shows you the power of the mind, the power of choice. The good news is that once you learn about that, you can use it. You can learn how to work with the Holy Spirit and use your power of decision to go home. And Gary says, superb. Superb. So I'm going to start using that word. So I have an important question that I've asked you before, but I'm wondering if things have changed because of my forgiveness. Would it be possible for me to completely forgive everything and learn all of my lessons in this lifetime? Could I wake up in this time instead and not appear to come back again for that final lifetime, Persa? And this is cool. I love this because I think that this is the absolute truth. The answer is yes, Gary. It would be possible. Yes, Bruce. Yes, Lynn. Yes, yes, Delia. Yes, Jim. Yes, Dove. Yes, Nigel. Yes, Iris. Yes, Ashley. Yes, it is possible for you to do this now. You don't have to keep coming back over and over and over again. There doesn't have to be an Artin and Persa, because that's a chapter, that's another chapter in the dream. And we can skip any chapter. We can skip the entire dream. That's what Jesus is telling us here. And so Persa says, yes. It would be possible for you to finish the job in this lifetime. As we've said, the lessons have the same meaning in all dream lifetimes. Only the forms change. You still have time to complete your lessons this time around. You've been doing good, and I like the way you're always turning it up a notch. All of your travels, which are a challenge on their own, along with all the coarse politics being thrown at you, meeting so many people, trying to get the TV series, and having responsibilities you didn't expect have all contributed to you being able to practice your forgiveness and get it up to a much higher level than what which you would have done if you had stayed in Maine, which you could have done. You know, I could have not picked up A Course in Miracles. I could not have, come on to Pal Talk. There's so many things that I could have done, but, of course, this is not how it worked. So a person is saying he could have stayed in Maine and done the same thing over and over, and we would never have had this. So don't forget, there are different dimensions of time and different scenarios available to you, depending on the choices you make at the level of the mind. But the Holy Spirit always decides what's best for you based on those decisions. Gary, that's great, but wait a minute. What's all that stuff about the script being written and those who are to meet shall meet and everyone must play his part? How does everything happen that's supposed to happen if I don't come back again? So he's fearing for the future because he believes in a future, right?
Because we all do, and we're all so invested in it, that's a question we're all asking. You know, it's like, well, what about all the things that I might miss, I saw that acronym a while ago, FOMO, the fear of missing out. and that's the belief that the ego fosters and perpetuates, that there's still something in the world that's going to make me happy. And there's nothing wrong with doing anything in the world. I mean, it's a neutral thing, because as the Course says, if there is no world, and that's the central thought the Course attempts to teach, then it couldn't be a big deal about what we do or don't do in the world. And our person was just pointing out that the lessons will still be the same, because the content of the mind is really the only thing that needs to shift to one of inclusion instead of exclusion, into oneness instead of separation. And we can do that with any particulars, any specifics, whether it's a different lifetime or a different state of the union or state of the world or whatever, So.
Exactly. So the story is all here. But it's just like, I went in the library and, I found the book that taught me everything in the whole library. I didn't need to read the rest of the books because I got it. Yeah. So it doesn't mean that the books are still there, the script is still there.
Yep.
Until we all wake up.
I was just going to say, and we all have that one magical, well, it's actually the not non-magical, it's the one that undoes ego's magic. It's one wonderful book on the how-to book on forgiveness is all within us, built in. We couldn't throw it away if we wanted to, and that's the only book in the library that really undoes the need for having to wade through all the other books, as you point out. So.
Yeah, it's like the card catalog.
Mm-hmm.
It's got everything in it. So,
right.
So Artin then says, you're being linear. That's what we're doing. And being, my name is Lynn, I always like being linear.
But, I never thought of that pun.
Every time I hear that word linear, I'm like, yep, that's me, getting linear every day. but I'm trying to stop. Okay, so Harton says you're being linear. There's something you're forgetting about when it comes to you having that final lifetime as Persa and Cindy as me. That lifetime has already happened. Everything happened all at once, and according to the Course, it's already over. You're reviewing mentally that which has already gone by. Remember? It's like watching a movie. Now let's say you're watching a movie in the theater with 50 other people and you get up and walk out. Isn't the movie still going? Don't the other people still see it? The fact that you're not there has no effect on the movie. It's two different things, apples and oranges. The movie keeps right on going for those who are there to see it. If you wake up from the dream and no longer see it, it has no effect on those who do. They still have to wake up in order to stop seeing the dream movie that they call life and see their real life instead, which is the life of God. And this is great. I'm going to keep reading. And Gary says, but then how can they see me if I'm not there? there's always, because it's me. I think it's me. It's me. It's me. It's that, this body, this life, this is not me. This is what's so cool. So yeah, I think that, you know, what would happen if I woke, well, if I'm awakened, you know, wouldn't my family miss me if I disappeared? No, because this body, this limb, this being will still be here and still be doing all the things that this body, this limb, this being is doing. I will just not have an investment in it, recognizing that whatever it is the perfect thing. And now I can think from a place of strength and knowledge rather than a place of weakness and fear. When I'm not associated with this body as being who I am and what I am, then there is no weakness. There is nothing to fear because the body is the only thing that can be attacked and the only thing that can be injured. So if I'm not associated with it, it can just go on and do all its thing. And of course, the personality of Lynn, the being, the person, still exists in the dream for the dreamers. But I personally have no attachment to it. And that's a hard thing to understand. You can't understand it. The mind can't understand it because it is the complete opposite of what the mind knows. But the truth is, that's exactly what it is.
You know, I think that's a good reminder, again, of why so many, you know, Eastern, if you will, inspired mystical teachings referred to the mind, usually it's getting, you know, sort of generalized to the lowercase m mind as being, you know, the realm of Maya and illusion, because, you know, we're so accustomed to thinking of mind as my little separate mind rather than the capital M mind, which is what the Course in Miracles suggests that we never left, but we've covered over with our obsession and compulsive identification with a seemingly separate self, and we're born into these bodies because we want to identify with that, you know, seemingly separate self, and the body is a further distraction. It's like the outer shield of oblivion, as A Course in Miracles says, to bolster and reinforce the inner shield of oblivion, which is the original idea of separation that we think was necessary because of the unconscious guilt that we're not even aware of, but we get back to the mind through looking squarely at the ego's arsenal of fear weaponry and you know, waltzing right through its attacks, recognizing that, but when we're holding the hand of our inner kindness teacher, we can look at these things without a need to shirk or look away, because if we look squarely at, as you know, in one of the sections about the, you know, the picture in the frame in the Course in Miracles, it says just look at the picture, you know, don't be distracted by the frame. The frame is the form, but if we can look at the contents of the little M mind and see that it's basically, it's the whole premise of it is a fearful thought, a silly, needless, fearful thought, then we can dismiss it, you know, and Jesus says in his book, you know, together we have the light that will dispel it. By ourselves, you know, our little us selves, you know, we're right smack dab on the screen again instead of watching in the audience, in the theater seats with Jesus, you know, passing the popcorn back and forth.
Exactly. And you can switch back and forth. I always was confused because Jesus says you can't be in both worlds. You can't be in two worlds. You can't think with the Holy Spirit and think with the ego at the same time. And I used to just think, well, I keep thinking with the ego, so obviously I'm not getting there. Not noticing and recognizing when I was thinking with the Holy Spirit. And what I've begun to do is pay closer attention to with whom I am thinking. And as I notice I'm thinking with the ego, I can just switch to thinking with the Holy Spirit if I'm willing to and if I want to. And that's a big deal. Am I willing to give up accusing you of being bad? Am I willing to give up my desire for ice cream? I mean, really, that's what it is. It's a willingness to not want anything else. And the most thing that we tend to want, or I tend to want, is to blame the world or blame my brother or blame somebody else for what appears to be going on. And as long as I continue to think that there are certain persons or beings that are responsible for what I consider my unhappiness, then I will never get out of thinking with the ego. It's when I recognize that no one is responsible because nothing is happening, and the idea that something is going wrong is just an idea in my mind that things are not the way I would like them to be. And, you know, I would like my bank account to have, you know, $5 million in it. I would like to be able to, you know, run 10 miles without losing my breath. There's lots of things I would like to be able to do, but do I need that? Is that necessary for my continued well-being and life in this world? No. Whatever is in the bank is exactly what I need. However far I can walk or run is exactly how far I need to walk or run. I don't need to go beyond anything other than what is. And the, you know, Dove always says this from the chapter on the Antichrist. What is the Antichrist? The Antichrist is the idea that I can have more, or I need more, or I want more. More is, I mean, that is the you know, why do the Koch brothers want more? You know, why... Why, when I'm eating chocolate cake, do I want more? It's because I'm not having what I have right now. I'm only having. I'm not even tasting what I'm having right now. I'm thinking into a time that doesn't exist, the future, and wishing for something different than what it is. You know, that's it. I'm just wishing for things to be different than they are.
And that's always going to be true in a world of duality, because, I mean, in this world you have the Koch brothers and the Pepsi brothers, right? It's just, instead of just the one thing, right?
Exactly. And one of them is real. It's the real thing.
Really?
Oh, that's hilarious. So do you want to continue reading?
Sure. Gary goes on and says, "But how can they see me if I'm not there?" Artin, you don't have to be there in order for them to see you, because you never were. What they're seeing is their own projection. And you only thought you were there because you still believed in separation and were making the projection real. You thought you were Thomas or Gary or Persa until you were enlightened. It doesn't matter when or where you become enlightened. Whether you're Persa or Gary, when it happens makes no difference. Gary, oh my God, I keep forgetting it's all made up. I'm so used to it being real that even after all this time, it's still hard to get that nothing about it is true. Well, he's speaking for all of us here, isn't he? But didn't you say that sometimes a master like Jay has to be there in order to point people in the right direction? Persa, yes. This doesn't invalidate anything we've told you. A chief aim of the miracle worker is to save time. Because of the time-saving feature of the Course, the Holy Spirit built it into the plan that people would have the choice of waking up faster than the script calls for. Then, whenever you become enlightened, your body, or what looks like your body, becomes a communication tool for the Holy Spirit. If you wake up faster because you exercise your power of decision to choose Spirit, which is the only free will you really have in this world, then you can act as an example for others even sooner, point people in the right direction, and accelerate the whole process for all of your brothers and sisters. So.
Oh, and then I have something to say about this. This is really pretty cool, mm-hmm. because it means really, say Jesus. I always wondered when I was a kid, you know, geez, here he is. He's gone to Jerusalem. You know, he knows that there's bad things going to happen. You know, they're going to catch him. They're going to kill him. They're going to torture him. They're going to do all this stuff. Why didn't he just up and run? Why did he go and hang out and wait for them to come and arrest him? You know, anyone with common sense would get the holy heck out of there, right? But he didn't. In this time of Lynn's thought, this is what happened. Jesus stayed, and he was caught, and he was prosecuted, and he was murdered. And then he came back 3 days later. That's my timeline of my experience in this world. There's probably many other timelines and experiences in this world where Jesus did run away, where Jesus did go somewhere else. Maybe he went to India and then became enlightened in India, or, you know, all kinds of things could have happened. But in my timeline, this is what happened. And just to know that, again, when we had the tiny man idea and imagined everything that could happen, we imagined that. That's a part of our imagination. I know that because I just imagined it. So, and I can't make up a new imagination. I mean, it's impossible for me to further miscreate by making up new imaginary stories. I'm only tapping into imaginary stories that were made at that instant and that exist somewhere in this realm of illusion. And that's why you can move between or into other chapters or other parts of the illusion through practicing, say, practice forgiveness in this lifetime, then and do it, you know, obviously the way that Jesus is explaining to us to do it, that you can become enlightened in this lifetime. And therefore, that doesn't mean that your family doesn't still see you. You know, I think that there are probably a lot of enlightened people that are not making big announcements and going on Facebook and having, building colonies and stuff. There's a lot of enlightened people that are just being and being love, and their physical body and their life in the world is going about whatever it was doing when they did wake up. But now, instead of having to think about what to say and what to do and where to go and how to do it and all that kind of stuff, now it just is that Jesus has, as he says in chapter 4, taken over the duties of our ego. And we no longer have to do what the ego needs us to do in order to survive, because it's just being done. It's being done through us. Has nothing to do with us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's really, you know, what physicists, I think, may have called some decades ago the ghost in the machine. You know, that's really the spirit, if you will, that is behind the the puppets, behind the you know, the dream figures, the children's toys that the course talks about, you know, the movie characters on the screen that you know, whatever, pick your metaphor, but all those things that happen in the world of illusion are really merely the mechanical playing out of a mechanical script, and there may be, you know, countless, you know, variants on those, you know, parallel universes or whatever you want to call it. But in each one of those, it's just, you know, a billiard ball, Newtonian universe playing out. But the beauty is that we have the quantum capability, kind of borrowing from physics, to hyperleap, hyperjump out of identification with those roles, no matter what timeline or script we think we're in, and accept the true reality of what we are, which is unlimited, eternal, immortal being, and it's all one thing. We're all it, and we're all the same thing. And that awareness then gives us the ability to kind of laugh at the fear thoughts. Because, like, oh, if this world really is an illusion, and that was Gary's aha moment in, you know, reading this, and we all have this over and over again until we get it consistently, you know, that this is just a silly, forgivable dream, and that we're all completely innocent, no matter what crazy shenanigans we see, you know, in our own lives or on TV with politicians or environmental crises or you know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter what the specific is. It's just a silly game, a silly child's game played by children having a little nightmare, a little crazy dream that has had no effect on our real being. And from that vantage point, it doesn't matter whether, you know, I get turned in or don't get turned in if I'm Jay in that lifetime. I mean, in some parallel lifetime, I picture him singing, you know, along with the rest of the people at Golgotha, you know, always look on the bright side of life, you know, with full Monty Python choral harmony, you know.
And the whistling.
And the whistling, yes. As skillfully done by Eric Idle's incarnation in that lifetime or whatever. Yeah. But the whole point is, you know, we never were in bodies. You know, this whole thing, as the profound wisdom of the East has taught us, you know, for millennia, you know, this is Maya or illusion. But what, of course, Miracles, as Ken Wapnick points out, is so skillfully, is that this is purposive, because if we you know, don't question the ego's default purpose, which is to keep us mindless and asleep, then, you know, we think we're the puppets. We think we're the dream figures. We think we're the actors on the screen instead of the you know, producers, directors, cinematographers, the film editors. You know, we're putting this movie together at a rate so quickly. We put Hollywood and the best of the special effects houses in the world to shame. But it's a massive 24/7, 365 holographic movie projection production. You know, with production values that make it seem so real. And we've all bought into it because it's the power of the mind is so profound.
But, well, so cool. Oh, yeah, that's going.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, so, yeah.
The idea that it seems so real only seems so real because we believe that that's what real looks like.
Yeah.
That's what's sort of the crazy thing. We have an idea in our mind of what real looks like, and so everything looks real to us, but it doesn't look like that at all. Reality doesn't look like what we see. All we're seeing is again, it's, you know, something in our own mind that we're thinking of, and we're making up our own idea of what reality is. And so it's not hard to meet that expectation. I mean, the ego doesn't have a difficulty meeting the expectation of showing us something as a reality, because our standards are so low for what reality is. No, everything is so flawed, but that's purposive too. The flaws are, you know, there are things that just tell us, oh, it shouldn't be this way, but you know, why is it this way and what's going on here? Those little flaws that make everything seem just off all the time, those are the things that lead us to say there's got to be a better way, or, you know, where is reality or where is truth? So, you know, all of it is purposive, and it's all, even when doing a tiny mad idea, a dream of a world that's an attack on God, we still had the sense to leave something in it that would remind us of the truth, and that is the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit, I don't see that the Holy Spirit was something that God created as a response to this forgetting to laugh at the tiny man idea. I think the Holy Spirit is just our right mind that left us. That, you know, we just said, hey, I'm not interested in you right now because I want to see this movie. So why don't you hang out here and let me go see what's going on? But our right mind says, yeah, nah, you know, I'm still here. No matter what you think, I'm still here in every single bit of this. And so when you get tired of seeing nothing but evil, just ask, just call, and I'm right here. Just call me and I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never worry.
Sounds like a James Taylor song. Yeah. And you know, a few moments ago, I was looking out at this apple tree. There's an old apple tree that's, you know, delivered many, many grocery bags full of apples over the years in my mom's yard in California here. And I'm, you know, you hit on something that reminded me of like the Platonic thinking that really is such an important part of the course, which is, you know, when I look at a specific instance of something, I'm not seeing the ideal. I'm not seeing the perfection. I'm not seeing the reality. I'm seeing a specific expression of one instance of the whole idea of appleness, if you will, you know, or tree-ness. And anything that is less than the total idea is a limitation. And so in this particular case, I see not only a specific apple tree that seems to be different from all the other ones on the planet, but I see, you know, a few dead branches that I need to trim next time I'm back here in midwinter, or maybe I'll, you know, do it while I'm still here. And then I see that it's not producing as much fruit as it used to do in years past, maybe because it survived a few droughts and you know, but that those are judgments that my little mind makes on this little tree in this little dream. You know, and so and none of that has any bearing on the reality of what I am or the tree is in truth, which is beyond any particular form, and we're all that same thing, you know, whether it's a person or a tree or a jet going through the sky or a molecule 7,000 feet underneath the bottom of the Marianas Trench, you know, below the ocean, or you know, it can be anything, you know, a quasar on the other side of the cosmos. Doesn't matter. It's all part of a massive dream that we made up so that we could stay mindless. But the reason I'm assuming that most everyone who's listening to this, unless they just happen to bump into this channel, is because we have this desire to want to generalize and to go beyond the specific and to return to that place of unshakable peace and innocence and joyous loving kindness in our mind that couldn't possibly be corrupted or tainted or diluted or distorted by anything in this world and not deceived by any specific thing. So anyway, thank you, Plato, and thank you, Gary and Artin and Persa and Lynn and Bruce and everyone, because we're all contributing in truth to that unfolding and that awakening, aren't we?
Absolutely we are. And it's just so lovely to see that, you know, once you start seeing, or for me, once I started seeing the truth of what Jesus was saying about how to look at my brother and how to look at this life and how to see things, which I never once before ever questioned that, you know, and it's so weird. I always just thought I was right, and I was learning more and more and more and more all the time, and all the things I was learning were emphasizing my rightness. But the truth is that all the things that I was learning were just actually emphasizing my belief in differences. And it wasn't until I thought that was what was making me good. You know, I could tell the difference between good and bad. So that made me good, and I was trying to make myself be more good and make other people be more good, because that's what made me good. I didn't realize anything. What Jesus is telling me in A Course in Miracles is that, you know, that's my own perception, and the way to make everybody good is to switch perceptions, just to see it differently, and not to make up stories to explain why people do things that I, you know, would think were bad. But why do I think that there are bad things and good things? Why do I think that there is something that's helpful and other things that are harmful? You know, why do I imagine, and it could be the same thing. You know, we think, and I know our time is up, and we're going to have to turn over to Iris and Carrie, but I just was going to say one little thing that, you know, like vaccinations for your child. When we had polio epidemic when I was a young child and children were dying and being put in iron lungs and being paralyzed, not just children, adults too, and they were all being, you know, terrible things were happening, and they came up with a vaccine for it, and then everybody got the vaccine, and we got it in school, and we got it with sugar cubes, and we got, you know, there were all sorts of preventive measures that came up, and now you hardly ever hear of anybody having polio. You know, that's you know what it is. You know, we make it up. We made it up, and we made up the idea of the vaccine to protect us. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You know, we keep coming up with, you know, deadly scenarios, and then saving ourselves from it in deadly scenarios, and people will say, well, vaccines are good because of that. And then other people started getting sick from the vaccines, and then people say vaccines are bad. And now everywhere you look is like, don't vaccinate your children. People are saying that. And, you know, what was good, what was bad, what was good is bad, is good is bad, is good. You know, as long as I'm living in a world where I'm seeing those dimensions of everything, then I'm not seeing the truth ever. It's just a big cover-up for everything. So, anyway, thank you guys for putting up with us. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks, everyone. Shout out to everybody who's listening. I know you rattled off some names in the ACIM Gather list roster this morning. Thank you all, and love to everyone. So.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. I love you, brother. Talk to you next week. All right. Bye-bye.